Good evening, everyone. Good evening, good evening, good evening. It is Wednesday night. It is 7 o'clock, and yes, we are still on The American Book of the Dead by E.J. Gold. And we've reached an interesting point in our travels, Ivan. We're on the 49th chamber.
Yeah, how about that?
Took us a while to get here.
It took us almost 49 weeks, didn't it?
No. This is our 59th week.
Okay. Right.
Yeah.
I had an idea it was something like that.
Well, we had a lot of considerations at the very beginning and getting going. And before we started on chamber by chamber, and some of the chambers took more than 1 week, and some of the chambers we were able to group together. But overall, it's been quite a journey. And we've had an unremitting crew of helpers. And I want to thank Silverdale and Harry. I think just the backbone, they've been here so many times, mm-hmm. George and Harry. Thank you so much for being a part of this.
I wouldn't return if it wasn't productive for me.
Good. Good, good, good.
And I'm glad that we were here, even though we had to repeat some of the grades two or three times.
Yes, we did. And we've had quite a cycle. As dynamic as it might seem to us now and today, we call back just a few weeks, a couple of months, and one of our dynamic participants was Susan Kessner. Do you remember how dynamic she was, you guys, particularly you two, for the longest period of time as we cycled through this material?
Yes, she passed on November 14th.
That's right. And so during this time, you know, Susan was an integral member of our chats, our discussions. She led us and helped us many, many, many times. She passed away. And then recently, I don't know if White Fear is on, and I can often never figure out what time it is in India, but I know it's something like 14 and a half hours or 12 and half hours.
Fortunately for us, we don't have to know what time it is in India.
Well, but it's interesting to be cognizant of it, because part of our team is there too. And she had a baby during that time. So we've had a lot of adventures during the class, outside of the class. We've had adventures working together as we've worked in terms of learning how to, for instance, read to each other, and as a live voyager, receive the readings. And I know several of us did that. I think you did that, Ivan. Did you?
Did you have a chance? Yeah, only one or two readings, yeah.
Yeah, and I did it with a number of people, and it's so dynamic to receive readings like that, but it's also very dynamic to give readings to someone who you know is right there. And I think you both did that, George and Harry, with Susan, right?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. It's an interesting event to do, because you create a space with that individual that is so unique and it's truly unique and also very intimate in a very profound way when it's spirit to spirit or mind to mind that you are able to be together there.
Well, also the urgency of the necessity.
Yes.
Susan knew her time was limited, and it just added increased urgency to the necessity of preparing herself.
Yeah, but it's going through the... Yeah.
And David, I never had the opportunity of meeting her in person. And even never not knowing what she looked like until after she had passed.
Interesting.
It made it even deeper, the connection.
She had been here to visit, so, yeah.
And I might also observe that all of us attending tonight have the urgency of necessity, because while we might think we have years and years to live, our time might actually be very short. So we try to capitalize on the opportunity of being together and study this material.
Yeah. Well said.
In any way that you look at it, George, our time is very short. I know that there's some younger people on, like maybe, I don't know, people's ages and stuff, but
really?
But let's say that Raven Wildflowers, that's a very young person compared to Ivan, for instance.
Well, that's not fair. Everybody's young compared to me.
Yeah, people like Badera, he's young.
Shamal, I'm
Buzz,
sure.
And Shamal, if she's on White Seer. So they're beginning their process. But if you start to have this scary experience of starting to study history of anything, and you see that the flow of time is so, one life is just a burst of a candle, and then it's out, and then it's over with. So we have a unique opportunity to spend some time together, and so, you know, we've debated this for several books. How is it that we can be of service to others? There's many ways of physically, externally helping others, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's also, if you are able to spend the time to develop your being in a certain way, then you help.
Dave, your broadcast has ended, so they're going to have to restart.
Sure.
And by the way, while we're offline here for a moment, I can't help but remember last summer, 3 days. You met with Neville, and he seemed like he was going to live for a number of years, but 3 days later he had passed. So.
Yeah.
We know not the hour or the day.
We're having broadcast issues. We're not sure what they are. Can you hear us over the computer, George?
Can
you hear us speak over the computer, or can you?
Let's see. You're just kind of coming back online now, so it'll take a moment. I think there's like about a 10-second delay between when you speak and when we hear it.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I hear you. Oh,
okay.
You were there. You were on for a moment, but now it's ended again.
She's rebooting it.
And we lost all of the chat until just right now, David.
Yeah, it was. Okay. It wasn't anything but hellos, but.
Yeah, and in May of last. Oh, wait.
Oh, yeah,
it's 8:33
a.m.
tomorrow in the morning.
8:33 a.m.
Right.
Yeah, that's 11. Well,
that's only
11 hours.
No, that would be 13 hours, 13 and a half hours.
Oh, yeah, right.
12 hours would be 7
yes,
hours.
Yes, right.
Okay, Marvette. Our technical staff is telling us that we've been refreshed. Hopefully we got a different server. We're consulting with the technical expertise that we have, and they're hoping it's going okay.
There you are. You're back on the air.
Okay, good.
Yes.
And and then Silverdale was reminding us also of one of our very dynamic members, Neville, and back in May, where I was meeting with him a lot at the time, and I had met with him on a Wednesday, and then Saturday morning he had I got a call from his ex-wife, and he had died.
Neville Throckmorton.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so he, I was just. We were reflecting on the cycle of this reading of this ABD class, and he had come often to the class and enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he felt like he was getting a lot from it. Now, Tamara Antimatter, I don't know if she's on or not. Sent me an email on the last class. She didn't respond to this one, you did, but on this particular email. And she said she was quite moved by the fact that for her, virtually each of the emails encapsulated a certain practicality of interface with the ADD for her in this life now.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't that what we're really talking about? You know?
Yeah.
We're really talking about, because
yeah,
we're, some of us, anyway, appear to be alive, not all of us, even though we might be walking through a room or whatever, but you never know. There's just no telling.
Appearances can be deceptive, is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
And you try your best, I guess. But the point is, if we are alive, there's a very unusual opportunity that we have. And if you think about it, we're given the opportunity to study a book that came about a long time ago, 1,200 years ago.
The Bardo Chodol, you mean?
The Bardo Chodol, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, you know, the Great Liberation Through Hearing in the Bardos. That was revived, in my opinion, by E.J. Gold in the 70s and presented again as a gift to the West.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, part of his, I don't know what his gig is, but I know that that helped me a lot.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You know,
I think you should also acknowledge that the lineage goes back probably to the Egyptian Book of the Dead and the Sumerian Book of the Dead or whatever. It's a very,
well,
it's a very long-standing tradition.
It's a long-standing tradition of the elders of a tradition speaking about the life between death and rebirth.
The in-between states.
Called the in-between states. And I remember very clearly when I was, Kelly was pregnant with my daughter, Sarah, and I don't know, it was a few months before her birth. And I remember sitting there with Kelly, and I had my hands on her huge belly. I don't know what was in there, but
yes, you do know what was in there. Sorry. Well, okay, maybe at the time you didn't know what was in there.
And I had this spectacular connection with that being.
Mm-hmm.
It was so clear and distinct to me, but unborn.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But unborn. But the being had arrived.
Right. Interesting.
Okay. The being had arrived in the jeweled temple. This being had cycled through somehow and said, this is where I got to be. These are the two guides that are
mm-hmm.
I'm seeking to come in through. And so she had rested in the jeweled temple. And then at that point is when it became, this was more than 27 years ago, crystal clear to me that the Voyager was existent in a non-physical form. A few months later, it was different.
Mm-hmm.
So we are in manifested bodies at this time. And in our manifestation, we are given a gift. And the gift is the gift of existence. And we particularly have the opportunity to give back. I had a client meeting this morning, somebody, And the person, I'm going to exaggerate, way exaggerate. Let's just say it was a very, in a certain way, a very average person, but suddenly, because of a number of sets of circumstances, suddenly wound up with a lot of money. Not a massive wealth of money, but a lot of money. And in the course of the last couple of weeks when we were talking about this, part of it was an uncertainty of receiving that money. There was an uncertainty about me getting that money, she said. And this morning, I think we had a breakthrough because I said, well, I just used this phraseology. You called it in and it came. And that, in a sense, means that in a certain way that the universe says, okay, you're ready for that next step. So, yeah, you have the money, but now the hard work starts. Because you were given something, and now it says it's time to do something with it. You're given this gift, and it's time to do something with it. And guess what? We also wound up together in a situation where we have the tools with which to do something with it. And one of them is right here.
Yeah.
The American Book of the Dead is a, for me, and I know that George has said this too, this is a practicum, right? It's a practical methodology of how to work now. Rudolf Steiner says that once you die, that you don't have much opportunity to change anything in your structure.
Mm-hmm. EJ has a formulation to that also.
And so, like, you enter into the Bardos with the Voyager as you are then. There's not like, oh, I think I'll start working on myself now. When do you have a chance to work on yourself? Today. Not tomorrow, because, yikes, today.
Yeah, in one of these chambers, one of these last chambers that we read, I believe it says,
wow.
I will choose a lifetime where I can work on my liberation so that when I'm back in the in-between states, you know, when I'm back here again, I'll be able to use my liberation for the benefit of other beings.
Because
where do you do the work? To work on my liberation is in the lifetime.
Right now.
That's the life.
So that's the blessing that we have. That's the gift we've been given. It's a great gift, like suddenly we have a lot of money. We've been given a lot of money. To be here with these spectacular tools. I won't embarrass you. Maybe I will. I don't know. But, Harry, do you remember when we went up to Seattle? When was that? A couple years ago?
Yes.
And we visited with George. And I don't know that I've met anybody that is as schooled as George is in his study of the Gurdjieffian material as well as the E.J. Gold material. This is a scholar. I mean, there's not many like that. And he's here in this class with us. You look online, how many people do we have?
14 viewers.
We have that many viewers, and these are all experienced operatives, is the way I call it.
Right.
You remember we did the hidden work, were you in Mike's group? You were in my group.
Well, I had the privilege to work with Susan on that angel Haniel.
And Vadir is on now. And Vadir would just come up with, like, original poetics. I mean, it blew me away. I know you have that experience more than I do, but I'm just like, where did that come from? She's an experienced operative. That's where it came from. And that's who we gather around us. our job is to then exercise that, get it stronger, like this poor unfortunate person who suddenly has a lot of money. Now she's got to work hard to make something of it.
Mm.
And in the same way, we must work hard and work harder and develop our muscles of attention in various ways. Different people have different technologies to do that. George has a very specific technique that he's spoken to us about. Harry, one of his techniques, he has a couple that are kind of profound. One, he throws himself in the middle of a group of unruly people, right, Harry?
Sometimes, yes.
Sometimes, yes. That dives into the middle of some of the most complex works. Together they work. And how many years have you been doing that now?
Do I have to be honest about how many years?
No.
A long time.
Say that you don't remember, Harry.
No, go ahead and lie, actually.
Well, since the early, late 60s, anyway.
Oh, my God. Late 60s, he says. And this is a discipline, and our Path World can't possibly be on tonight. Path World is on? Oh, my God. He probably got discouraged by the broadcast. And she'll tell us whether or not she's ever taken... is this the full moon tonight or this weekend?
Not quite.
This weekend, maybe?
Close.
And then that's when she'll do the labyrinth walk down in Riverside, California, which she's been doing for about 17 years. So these are disciplines that these individuals have carried on day in and day out and year after year to hone these tools that we bring to each other. So I wanted to go over the 49th chamber because I was quite moved by it, Ivan. And do you want to go ahead and read that for us?
Sure.
It's really quite interesting.
Yeah, I read your email.
Did you read it?
Yes.
I was surprised that it came out when I was typing. For some reason, I wind up getting, I'm in a busy part of my year right now, and I wind up really enjoying this time at around 4 in the morning on Wednesday a.m., and I recycle through the thing, and that's when I've been writing the email, and then this just came, what I wrote. Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Tell us what the chamber is.
49th chamber. I'll enter now into the soft blue light of the human dimension, or the soft white light of the sun absolute. If I can, I'll enter the jeweled temples and gardens of delight.
That's it. That's the whole instruction. So the Voyager at this point, there's just a note of encouragement to me when I heard that, you know, if I can.
Yeah, right.
It's like it's there.
Yeah.
You know, it's there. And in a couple of chambers before, of course, it says, go back to 46. I'll go.
I will be born as a being in the line of the teaching?
That's the concept, but it says, I'll concentrate fully on this intention, being born in the line of the teaching. That's the previous. And then it says, which will open a suitable womb. Immediately upon entering such a special womb, I will sanctify it. So the Voyager, for the last several chambers, is preparing themselves, preparing, mm-hmm. and now they enter the jeweled temple. And I got to tell you that there was no question in my mind that when Sarah was born, that's the sanctity that she mm-hmm. brought into the space.
Right.
There was a sanctification, and the entire room was paused looking at that. The biggest being in the room was the smallest character in the room. And it just filled the room with presence and being. And I would say that white fear could tell us something similar to that. And it just struck me that that's what happens in these events, these birthing events. That's why they're so momentous. That the being has sanctified the womb, and they said, I'm here. This is the sanctification. I come through in sanctity, and I bring that to this space.
Yeah, what you're describing, this is like Jacob's ladder. It's the bridge between worlds.
Right? Yeah.
It's a bridge. It's two dimensions that are getting touching, that are joining briefly, or whatever span it is, there's connection.
So we can pay attention to these birthing moments. Not only did they occur in the physical event that some of us have had the wonderful opportunity to observe, but also in our daily life, we look around us and we're going to see moments like this, birthing events that occur with people.
Mm-hmm.
Those that have eyes, cleanse those eyes so you can see them. They will occur around you. Suddenly something will open up and the person just becomes.
Actually, I wanted to say, I like something that you touched on very earlier, just a while ago, David, about regarding the sort of fellowship that we have, you know, to do this work together,
yeah.
That it's an essence, like to have an essence relationship, that it's something different than just ordinary association or ordinary friendship. And,
right.
You know, it was reminding me of, it's funny, something about the way that you said it, it reminded me of, like, some of my earlier experiences in a study circle, you know, with this institute and doing training with people and so on. And it's sort of like, you know, it has an aspect that's like the Fellowship of the Ring, which is to say, you know, boy, I would certainly not hang out with this dwarf, you know, or this elf with this stupid bow and arrow and all that. These are not my type of people at all and so on.
For but years.
But you find yourself obligated. You're on this quest together and so on. And there's a bond, so you have a bond, but which is not based on ordinary material attractions and repulsions or whatever. It's based on the essence. It's based on the essence quality of that you share. You share something, and that's because I just remember from like some of the groups of people that I've worked with, it's sort of like you actually reach a point with people when you go through a certain amount of intensity with people. I mean, you actually stop. You don't gossip with them. You know, you don't actually chat or have ordinary conversations. You start. It comes about when you meet one another. You sort of look one another in the eye, and you have a. You know, you remind one another that you've been going through these experiences together, or that you've been doing essence work, and it's a different bond. It's a whole different kind of bond.
It is.
But I like the idea that you're saying. I think it doesn't mean that it's irrelevant to walking into that Starbucks, you know, store or,
right.
or getting out of my car on the street or whatever, you know, that it's possible to convey the aura, you know, to convey some energy, some of that vibrational, that vibrational signature.
You could conveying it.
Yeah, you can, whatever you could call it. You, could
you are conveying it
yeah, you,
all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I know that some people that are here don't go out very much, but
right.
You are conveying that. Those of us that do go out, we are conveying that emanation all the time. Let me ask you a question, George. Like, part of your practice, I think, is you have a strong monastic practice, but then during the day you go out into the public. Is this correct?
Absolutely, you know, our physical body serves as a denying force, and in is a denying force to the affirming force of our essential self. Well, the only way to allow that denying force to serve its purpose is to be out and about and be involved in ordinary life and use it as a kind of a grounding element for the efforts to affirm, allow our essential self to grow.
I just had the strangest thought, because sometimes when, and Ivan, you mentioned Starbucks, and I think sometimes you might go to that same location, George.
Yeah.
And when you are there, you never know, in a sense, when somebody may need you. Does this make sense at all?
Absolutely, for sure. And maybe even more significantly is that as our essential self grows, it's able to look more objectively at the environment around us and perceive those who might be a little more conscious. Most people appear to be unconscious. They don't know it, but as our essential self matures and develops, it becomes more apparent to us. And in interactions, you're able to perceive people kind of being aroused out of the slumber of their unconsciousness, and then hopefully you have the wisdom to address it without crushing it, you know.
Correct. Yeah. There's a subtlety of practice when you are with others, and they're ready to hear something different. Like this person I worked with this morning, was ready to hear something different.
Mm-hmm.
And they heard it. I mean, they went away engaged, excited, and knowing what they were going to do next, and willing to put in the work now. So we go about our days, and as we go about, we are ambassadors. We are ambassadors of this inner work that we're a party to right now. So just remember that. You have entered the human realm. You are part of the human realm. But you are part of the human realm as an ambassador in that realm. Of course, all of us have much to learn. No question about it. That doesn't mean we also don't have much to give. There's a ladder, as Ivan was saying, there's a ladder that we, as we climb up in our work and we go up this ladder of being,
mm-hmm.
and we become a different form of ambassador, sometimes we can begin to make out those great beings that are above us, and we can see some of the beings below us as well, and we can extend a hand of help. So we do our best in that regard. Yeah, so it's been an interesting cycle.
David, I have a question.
Yes.
Is there a lady who often is on this program named White Deer from India?
Yeah, White Seer with an S.
And how long ago did she join?
White Seer, that's Shimon, became a few months.
The reason I ask this is that I normally don't focus on these things happening in the physical, giving me all kinds of nice physical signs of what is true. But I wanted to share very briefly three things that I think are synchronous. One was that Susan passed on the 14th of November.
Right.
On Christmas Day, I went to our ranch, and I was riding my bicycle around by myself. when in front of me, 30 yards away, stood a white deer, a solid white deer with 10 points of yellow horn. He was magnificently beautiful, and it stunned me. He looked at me for about 5 seconds and then took off into the woods. No one else has seen him before or since. I came back home. I didn't know really what to make of this. And then White Deer mentions that she has a baby.
White Seer in this case, but it's close.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't remember if it were the same at all. But to me, it was close enough to draw my attention to something else happening beneath the surface of things, which is what we're learning to pay attention to and to discern through this work we're doing right now. Anyway, I wanted to share that.
Certainly sounds like a signpost, you know, as far as the timing being Christmas Day.
There you have it. I don't know what to make of it other than it struck me as being important here last week. I realized all those things that happened pretty much simultaneously. So
right.
There you have things speaking to you that normally I wouldn't even notice.
So this isn't, see, there's, we don't know. Maybe there's a linear explanation of it, but there's a particle of meaning that is posted within you now, Harry, just because of the event itself.
And I probably projected that meaning, but it's still there nonetheless.
That's right. Well, I don't know about that.
I think of these things as, you know, because, I mean, you're talking about a kind of experiences where, you know, I often take something like that, like I end up writing a poem about it or storing it away to use.
That's right.
Somewhere in creative work, you know, but it's like it often seems to me that it's a reminding factor in the sense that it's like a signpost. I mean, you have a marker in your life, like something, you know, the universe or yourself or beingness or something has sent you a message. You know what I mean? It's like a signpost. That's what I'm thinking.
As someone once said to me fairly recently, don't overthink it. Mm-hmm. I was once in a particular kind of a chamber with EJ, and certain things were going on and all of that. And I remember he extended his arm out to me with his hand, his palm up, I don't know if you can see it. But his palm up, and then, in a sense, inviting me to touch his palm,
mm-hmm.
right? And there was an energetic flow that occurred. And he said, that's just a different form of communication. And was very careful not to define it,
mm-hmm.
because that would take it into the different realm, Harry. There's no reason to define it. You note it. And that opened up an enormous number of channels for me in terms of how to perceive. It's not, and it means this, 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 and the other thing. No. It just opens up a channel of perception that is now available to me.
Kind of like seeing three roses together in the right light. They're just beautiful in themselves.
There's a, you know, I wrestle with these neuroscientists from time to time, And some of them, of course, deny the existence of the soul. It's just the brain, right?
Okay. All right.
But there's something called qualia that they're stumped by, because it's like the action of perceiving. It's like, it's not the, and I perceived and it was red. That's the result of it. But there's this function, like when you get the idea or you get the feeling, that's the point. There's a sensation that occurs.
It sounds like you're, like Zen, like we're talking about a Zen moment or something.
It's a Zen moment.
Practice.
And it's okay
like
to keep those alive.
Yeah.
How are we doing over there? Okay, that's all right. I can hear you fine.
You want to use the phone?
So Philadelphia says that a couple of weeks ago, she said that a month ago, that is mid-January, that the baby was born.
So we have November, Susan passes, Harry has this event, and then in January, a new birth was taking place. And the reason is that now it's on the recording, Dan. It gets posted on the site. So those are all part of the dynamism that is what is our group, that's all.
Right.
What else did you think when you read this very short paragraph, this last instruction in a sense? Anything else come to you?
The effort we make can make a difference.
The effort we make can make a difference.
Yeah, I can.
Yeah, if I can.
If I can, I'll enter the jewel temples and gardens of delight.
We are still projecting this reality.
Yeah. But if I can, means are my practices alive? Are they active? And the answer is, that's what we can do now, keeping them alive.
How about this, David? How about the confrontations while experiencing reality in the voyage through the labyrinth called the teaching which liberates by sound is now completed?
So this is the beginning of the commentary right after the series of readings. And that's very good, Ivan, because we have to remember that this in part is it's an instruction that is delivered by sound. And I think it was Yonesh that was saying that the reading for Shakti is just over now, or just, I think, is completed. Is that right?
Yes.
Just finished today,
just finished.
The 49th chamber?
Yesterday.
How do you like that, huh? Yeah, so that was a series that occurred. That was an instruction, and it's a instruction through hearing. Mm-hmm. So it's vibratory. This is all about vibratory stuff. It's all about vibratory stuff. That part is now concluded, right? That's what you were telling us?
Yes. You say the cycle. It's like the cycle is complete.
Yeah.
And Gopal says, What has always struck me about this last chamber is how totally unexpected, visual, and refreshing it is. It is almost like it is a new beginning.
Right. Well, that's what birth, David, is referring to. It seems to be reflecting the birth.
The birth is upon us at that time. Yeah, that's
the next life. Yeah, the next life is starting now. But I think it also has that quality, you know, the reason it's reminded you of Sarah arriving as a being, let's say,
mm-hmm.
is that it has that quality of the in-between state, you know, the Bardo voyage is now, there's a nexus. I mean, it's the moment or the interface with mm-hmm. the lifetime. With the lifetime, it's the connection of the Bardo voyage with the next lifetime.
Mm. Yeah, and it was very apparent to me. It was very apparent to me that space was brought into the physical space that we were at. She was
mm-hmm.
born in early in the morning, and. It made it so possible to be in that space with her. And my job, I thought at the moment, was to not disturb her sense of being while she's now physically entering into this space with us. So that's part of what we're doing. So that's part of what, there's a voyage of protocol that if you take on the role of a guide, and you go through your life and your town like you're a teacher,
mm-hmm.
and Arya is a teacher too, and so is Raven. I don't think she's on, but she's a teacher of young people. These are guides. These are sacred guides, Ivan.
Mm.
You know, when you're sitting
it's
there,
a responsibility.
Huh?
Raven Flowers.
Yeah, and she's
it's a responsibility, yeah, to get up in front of young people.
It's a huge responsibility. it's a sacred act in my book, particularly for these individuals who have worked so hard like Ivan has. Ivan has been teaching ever since I met him 25, 30 years ago. He's been teaching in one form or another.
Yeah, I could say that.
You have, and you've been temporary teaching or whatever.
Yeah, sure. Well, you know what? It's interesting that you should bring this up now. I just had the opportunity, because I'm substituting in some classes for a colleague of mine just for a couple of weeks, I had to walk into somebody else's lesson plans or something.
Yeah.
So I walk into this class where the this professor is teaching them, is having them read Hamlet and Othello, which is going into all this stuff about the Renaissance man and the humanism and the rediscovery of Platonism and Aristotelianism. So I got to, I said, well, what do you guys get out of this? And they're saying, we're completely baffled by this. Like, we're not getting any of it at all. What are we supposed to do? Go to the library and read all this or whatever.
Right.
And so like, it was a great, I gave them a lecture about Socrates and Plato and the Academy in Athens and Aristotle. It was a great thing. Actually, I think they were, I don't know if it was exactly spellbinding, but I think, I hope they got something out of it. You know, it was a rare opportunity, because I actually talked about the, what is Platonism? Well, what about the possibility that all these, you know, this table and the book and everything that's around us are just really kind of a pale version of some other realm? Where there are ideas and archetypes
that's
and so on. Plato. And yeah, no, that was really great because I looked at them and they're going like, what? What are you talking about? So it was actually quite a good opportunity.
So we have an opportunity to sacrifice for others in a sense. Ivan was himself and he didn't try to follow a plan or some linear thing. He just said, here's what I'm going to do. After many years of experience, he was able to transmit some of his being to these individuals. And they caught some of it.
It's possible, yes. Their opportunities arise like that.
Yeah.
Take advantage.
So we have to look at those opportunities and see what we can do with them. Some of us are in the world more than others. And those of us that work in the world have opportunities, and it's a different gig, that's all. A different gig.
Oh.
And the fish agrees too.
We're kidding. Redfin is registering a comment here.
Anyway, we're going to work with the appendices for a few more weeks. So Pat is very anxious to get into the appendices and some of the Bardo stations, and it'll be good to do that. It'll be good to do that. And
we're going to do this afterward. Yeah, we're going to read all this. Huh?
Yeah, we'll read through all of the after material,
mm-hmm.
And we'll do that. That'll take us a few weeks still, and then gradually we'll finish this book, and then we'll be ready to start in on the next one, The Practitioner's Guide. So there you have it.
David, I want to thank you and Ivan and Pat for all the work you've done on this course. It's been great.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thanks are due to everyone, I think, in this case. You know, this is a larger entity here. This is a...
Yeah.
The group is an entity.
Yes.
You know, I think we made it... Susan made this... she found these images of the angels.
Mm-hmm.
And she made this little card for me on Haniel. And for her, was the essence of it was be true to who you really are. And so she made this little teeny card, and it just sits there on my desk. You know, very nice. And I think when we were working with the angels and the angelic beings in the different chambers, we were able to sense that larger being, you know, the hosting that larger being. And certainly that's something we've been doing over the last 59 weeks. So.
Well, it gives you, I appreciated going through the hidden work because I felt I got a lot out of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, there were parts of it that I had either paid no attention to before or just didn't get much out of it. You know, it changed the value of it and the weight of various things, and like my feeling for I wasn't actually raised much with angels coming
uh-huh.
from a Jewish, although there, you know, angels are Jewish in
yeah.
origin, but Jewish and Islamic and whatever, but I wasn't really raised around angels, but I got quite a feeling for the angelic entity, you know, for that larger beingness or whatever,
right,
you know, for what the angels are about. I appreciated that.
So we're in the cycle now of the Voyager experiences, where as we wind down with this particular book, the ABD, we're going to continue with the American Book of the Dead, The Practitioner's Guide,
right,
which is a whole other slant on it. It's a whole other way of looking at it. But several of us thought that it's important to stay in the sense of the Voyager and keep your sense of being a Voyager alive as much as you can, as dynamically as you can.
Mm-hmm.
So you walk into a space, Ivan, and suddenly these are the students that happen to be there today. Like on this day, like suddenly Jackie is active in the class.
Right, yeah.
Right, and you notice that, and you just kind of notice it. Or you're riding your bike on your ranch somewhere and a white deer shows up. You just got to... pay attention,
mm-hmm.
and you don't know what's being presented to you at all times, and so there's this sense of wonder when you come into it, and you just go, okay, this is what's been laid out in front of me. I accept this offering. And you don't need to interpret it. Sometimes you might need to act, however. And you need, that's the dance of the Voyager that comes in. And you need to know that sometimes it's your turn to speak or hold the door or smile for somebody or answer a difficult question for someone. Because you're able to, then you're charged in a sense with doing it. And as such, that's when you come into your own. You know, many, many years ago, EJ, we were talking about Voyager. He says, you don't know what your job might be. It might be to travel to Amarillo, Texas. And do something, do one act there.
Yeah, order a hamburger.
And then that's it. And then you, that's your job, and you did it.
Uh-huh.
But you get the sensing of this, of this, by participating in the fact that we are voyagers. So let us be voyagers as we wind down our work with these 49 chambers and not leave the sense of the voyager as we go out. Okay?
David Gopal says, keep our sense of being a voyager as dynamic and alive as you can.
Dynamic and as alive as you can, Grant. And you take it, the thing that's the most fun is the thing that's the most common things you do every day that are mechanical for you. Mm. To bring in, you go into that and you can sense your being, your machine starting to take over, the historical personality gaining power, and then stand aside and stand in the position of the Voyager at that moment and look around.
Hey, Dave, your broadcast just ended.
Okay. Of course we lost the broadcast.
It's been a rugged evening.
Maybe that's...
We should just...
It's rebooting.
Yeah.
It's going on and
off. Okay.
We never know which words will be our last.
There you are. You're back
that.
On the air.
Yeah.
We're
well,
already back on the
we're,
air.
We're back on the air, I think, just briefly, right, Dan?
Oh, okay.
Not there.
Yeah, well, we never know which words will be our last.
Okay. So anyway, that's all I had at tonight, and any kind of their vision. Any closing words? That's it for tonight, I guess.
Yeah, I could read a poem, but...
Well, actually, there is time for that, and I had the intention of that, and I forgot about it. And so, Ivan, do you have that with you?
Are we on, though?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, well, this would be... It actually wouldn't be so unusual for poetry to go off the air when it's being read, but... since it's an esoteric art form.
Give the back a little background.
I felt that I realized that especially relevant to this 49th chamber is this piece that I wrote, which is an elegy. It's called Elegy for My Uncle, which I wrote because I was doing readings for this uncle of mine who died, and he was a New Yorker born and bred. He spent his whole life in New York, and I happened to be in New York, and I was staying. I was put up by Evan Lurie and Jimmy King. They had this beautiful, like, penthouse apartment in Midtown Manhattan, and you know, I had a bedroll on the floor there for a couple of nights. They were hosting me, you know, basically for a book show or something, and so I was doing the readings. You know, I got up in the morning and did this reading. I lit a stick of incense, and I had a bell or something like that with me, and I was, you know, going through the ABD for my uncle. So this was what struck me about this situation. It was an unusual situation for me to be reading in because I was away from home, and it was the only time I read in that particular room, let's say, or by the window looking out. And this was way up. This was like, I don't kind of the 27th floor or something. It was quite high up in Manhattan. So this is the elegy that came out of that, and I would just say that for me it represents, it's sort of like my bridging between the bardo, the reading that I was doing, and the so-called ordinary reality outside the door after I did this reading. So elegy from my uncle. To the divine silence of unreachable endlessness. On the 19th floor of the window of Evan and Jim's Manhattan apartment, I should say on the 19th floor at the window of Evan and Jim's Manhattan apartment, I am reading the Voyager instructions for my uncle, Morris Bacrassa. Moish, born 1919, died 2001 on Long Island, New York. I can easily call up his image in the easy chair, Dyckman Street near Broadway apartment, reading the New York Times, the tremor in his hands from birth. Despite the cerebral palsy, he could use wrenches and screwdrivers. He showed me when I was a kid how to work on a car engine, how to rig up a fishing rod, even to tying hooks. And the thrill of landing that first catch, a 3-inch sunfish, was so great I never needed to fish the ocean for sailfish or sharks. To the divine silence of perfected knowledge. In one of these Manhattan buildings, my uncle worked for years delivering the mail to Blue Cross offices, wheeling a cart from the mailroom until his legs hurt. And when I would visit the city, he'd take me on outings to the Metropolitan or the Natural History Museum, and even to Carnegie Hall in 1961 or 62 to see Bob Dylan in his immigrant cap singing, "It's a hard rains are gonna fall," a thrill for me while my uncle was skeptical. To the divine silence of the labyrinth guides. This morning, the Chrysler Building is a jeweled tower from a fairy city. Midtown is a computer board of energy cells. The sun breaks out of the gray sky and flames the city. And I see that another sun gleams on the parapets. The clear light of the void illuminates every window of every apartment and office building. My uncle grins in his musty chair over the newspaper, and he is immersed in the clear light. For my Uncle Moish, I remember myself as the Voyager, whose deepest nature is the clear light itself. I strike the closing tone, blow out the candle, leave the window. Downstairs, the elevator of Evan's building opens onto the blue light from the human dimension. But walking distance, not far away, right in this East Side neighborhood, I expect to find jeweled temples and the gardens of delight. So that was an experience.
Thank you so much.
Very good.
What a beautiful evening.
Yeah, and I get once in a while I get the opportunity to read that to strangers, you know, to read it in public.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I did it. There's something called the Altar Show here in the fairgrounds in Grass Valley, and they had a little get together with dancers and music and poetry. And because it was all about altars for the ancestors, for the dead, I read that elegy. So, and it was well received, actually.
And that's published in the book
That's part of the. It's part of the appendices of the Caregiver Revolution, because we were invited by Patricia Elizabeth and Grant, who's on with us tonight, to contribute memoirs or stories about readings, and that was actually the best I had, because that was actually
pretty good
poem based on a reading from my uncle.
Thank you for that, and thank you, Grant and Pat,
for
making that happen. And we'll look forward to seeing you again next Wednesday at 7, when we'll continue with Pat and some of the other appendices here in the ABD.
Onward.
Thanks, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks, Dave and Ivan.